Welcome. I would like to welcome everybody listening all around the world, all across the United States. We are live from the City of Angels, the communication hub that is Coast to Coast AM Studios right here in Los Angeles, California. I'm your host for the weekend, Jimmy Church, and tonight we are going to celebrate the 160th birthday of Nikola Tesla. Someone that has been lost to history and the mainstream. He largely remains a mystery, and he is the true definition of an enigma. For me, there are two versions of Tesla, maybe three, maybe even four. We have the genius inventor responsible for the design of modern alternating current, you know, the AC electricity supply system in your home, electric motors, generators, Niagara Falls. Then there's the futurist, with his ideas of wireless lighting and free electricity distribution, wireless communication. In his lab, he experimented with mechanical oscillators, generators, electrical discharge tubes, and even an early X-ray imaging machine. He also built a wireless-controlled boat. And then there was the mad scientist, with the rumors about time travel and ray guns and flying saucers and his communication with the Black Knight satellite. His patents had earned him a considerable amount of money. Lots of ducks were quacking in his pond. But he died broke after living in a series of New York hotels through his death on January 7th, 1943. Now, the urban legend is that agents of the United States got to his apartment before everybody else did, and while his body lied there, they collected all of his research papers from his last hotel room, and they sent anything that they didn't want back to Budapest, Hungary. It's a crazy story. So who was the real Nikola Tesla? Tonight, my three guests are going to help us answer that question. We have Mark Safer, and he's an expert on Tesla. He's the author of Wizard, The Life and Times of Nikola Tesla. We have Tim Eaton tonight, and he has worked at ILM Lucasfilms for 15-plus years on movies such as Deep Impact, Back to the Future, Galaxy Quest, The Mummy, Forrest Gump, and even Titanic. He is currently finishing a new screenplay about the life of Tesla. And my first guest is our good friend Andrew Bishago, who participated in two secret U.S. defense projects in not only time travel on Earth, but voyages to Mars, and when they were first undertaken with Tesla technology. Now, continuing the theme of the weekend, sometimes we need to unplug from the machine. Let's do that again tonight. Let's go on a journey. Yes, the studio is dark, and it's just you and I and a microphone. We're going old school. I'm going to keep the phone lines open all night again tonight. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Tonight, we are celebrating the 160th birthday of Nikola Tesla. You can follow me right now on Twitter, at JChurchRadio. For any questions or comments during the show, I do keep Twitter running live in real time to my left, and I'll be right back with my first guest, Andrew Bishago. All right, welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host for the weekend, Jimmy Church, and tonight we're going to celebrate Nikola Tesla's 160th birthday. We're continuing the unplugging to the machine. Andrew Bishago is a prominent figure in the truth movement. For more than 10 years, he has shared with the American people the true facts of our great nation's accomplishments in time travel and Mars visitation. He has done so with one who has served bravely in two secret U.S. defense projects in which time travel on Earth and voyages to Mars were first undertaken. Tonight, we're going to talk about the use of Tesla technology and time travel, and I would like to welcome back to Coast, Andrew Bishago. Andrew, good evening.
It's good to be back, Jimmy, and I'm very excited to be participating in this marvelous show in which we laud one of the great forgotten geniuses of our uniquely great American civilization.
Why is that, Andrew? Why has history, you know, just forgotten Tesla and his accomplishments? It just seems like he's been erased.
He He has been. I think it's because, look, Tesla designed the technical and energy infrastructure of the 21st century. And as such, his work was inherently economically and socially disruptive. It was disruptive technology because it was too cheap to meter, and therefore the financial sector could not make a profit if his works were introduced in a broad societal sense. Now, we see that cover up during his lifetime in basically the subversion of his career by men like J.P. Morgan, George Westinghouse, and Thomas Alva Edison. And we find it today in the ongoing cover up of the emergence of Tesla teleportation in real time and Tesla teleportation-based time travel that was achieved by DARPA's Project Pegasus, which has been the thrust of my truth campaign.
And what's interesting is that you can find certain pictures, you can find some things on the net of some pretty fantastical machinery that was way ahead of its time. And then when you try to take that research a step further, almost nothing is there. It's very hard to find information on Tesla.
Right, and that's led to the sort of the legend that Tesla's papers were lost, but they were never lost. They were secreted. So let me try to tie those elements together. Tesla had been working up to the time of his death. He wasn't just raising pigeons for that last 15 years of his life. He was designing the technical infrastructure of the 21st century. So he dies at the New Yorker Hotel in Manhattan on January 7th of 43. And I don't think it's urban legend that we find it, for example, I don't know what Tim Eaton is going to be writing about this subject, but we find in conventional biographies of Tesla, including Margaret Cheney's, that there were two War Department officials racing against two FBI agents, and that the War Department officials got to his apartment at the New Yorker first, and they seized his papers and effects under the Alien Property Act, which gives the federal government the right to seize the papers and property and personal effects of basically non-citizen aliens who are in the country who have died without issue, without heirs. Those papers and effects of Tesla were then forwarded to the National Archives. It's now 1944, and the world's leading physicists and engineers who were allied with the Allies were then gathering in Los Alamos, New Mexico, to design the atomic bomb. And they formulated the Los Alamos Scientific Laboratory, which would ultimately become LANL, the Los Alamos National Laboratories.
Right.
I know that Tesla's papers are there from several sources. One is that when I was serving in Project Pegasus, my dad and I went over there because he was one of the American electrical engineers who had the security clearance to access Tesla's original papers, which were never lost, but which are being kept at the Los Alamos National Laboratories. I also confirmed that during my investigation of my experiences in a conversation with journalist William Lyne, who corroborated that indeed Tesla's papers are at LANL.
With what ended up going to the museum in Budapest, and who determined what papers, went there and what stayed here?
Well, I would save that question for Tim Eaton, but I know based on the works that were derived from those papers that they contained the seeds of teleportation, and with further development by ARPA, which then of course became DARPA during those years,
Right.
Tesla teleportation-based time travel would ultimately emerge from those papers kept at LANL. So, I mean, that's really the nature of what I'm trying to correct or provide American history. And that is that not only did we achieve time travel by 1970, but the time travel program was the secret twin of Project Manhattan, the atomic bomb project, and involved some of the same physicists. And the principal contribution that they were deriving their ideas from and their methodologies was in fact Tesla's papers that they were keeping at LANL.
Did Tesla intend for this research to be used for time travel? Was that part of his vision back then, or did they just take that data and research and use it for time travel?
No, I think there's a critical piece here that I can describe that really shows how we get from what Tesla left in his papers to teleportation in real time. So let me describe that.
Sure.
What happened is that my late father, Raymond F. Bishago, was employed at the Thomas A. Edison Research Laboratory in West Orange, New Jersey, from 1956 to 64. That was a top lab. For example, J.B. Johnson, the quantum physicist, the discoverer of white noise, had a desk, two desks over from my late father at that institute. I know from information provided to me by my dad in the early 70s that the U.S. government came to him and asked him to recapitulate Tesla's teleportation work. So he described to me how he was magnetizing metal cylinders and doing things like dropping pennies and pool chalks into the cylinder. And to his astonishment, the objects were appearing at the end of the cylinder too early, too late, or not at all. Now, what's interesting about this is that when I described him dropping pennies into these basically magnetized Tesla cylinders, sometime there in the late 1950s, when I first appeared on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie on November 11th of 09, I described my dad doing that, and then I received an email that I believe was sincere from a man who, when growing up in Montclair, New Jersey, in the 50s, found a 1958 penny in the street in Montclair in 1956, which could have been one of the pennies that my dad was dropping through these magnetized cylinders.
Interesting.
Okay, so Coast actually factually finds itself into the historical timeline of the Tesla teleportation story. Now, I also know from my dad's statements to me and my own experience in Project Pegasus that there was a decision around the mid-1960s to build one of Tesla's prototypes that was in his papers being kept at LANL at the Curtiss-Wright Aeronautical Company facility in Woodridge, New Jersey. That was the two elliptical-shaped booms that I've described in my interviews on Coast.
Right.
Now, what happened is a technician was retrieving a screwdriver across the shop floor and walked through the radiant energy being broadcast between the two booms of that device. It was actually labeled, apparently in Tesla's paperwork, simply energetic array. So we don't know whether Tesla intended that device to be a teleporter. But when the technician walked through the energy that it was propagating, energy that was described to me when I was officially part of Project Pegasus as radiant energy, a form of energy that Tesla discovered that is latent and pervasive in the physical universe and that has the capacity to bend the fabric of time-space, that hapless technician sort of tumbled to Africa, and he spent 6 weeks trying to convince the Africans who he was, that he wasn't a demigod of some kind. He was an American technician, and he got back to the United States. And as I was told, when he showed up at the shop floor, his supervisor fainted because his supervisor thought he had been disintegrated by the device, not that he had entered a vortal tunnel and accidentally was escorted, to Africa. And that story actually was told apocryphally on Coast by my good friend Sean David Morton, who was attributing the man to being Maitreya, and there was some kind of miraculous aspect to it. It wasn't. It was just one of the technicians working for ARPA to prototype that device from Tesla's paperwork. And in other words, even if Tesla intended that device to be a teleporter, ARPA, which we now know as DARPA, accidentally discovered that it was a teleporter, and that became the bulwark of Project Pegasus, that device.
At Pegasus and ARPA and LANL at that time, were they using Tesla's name in conjunction with the research that they were working on? This is Tesla's technology. This came from Tesla's research papers. This was, you know what I mean? Did they actually give him credit as this research was ongoing?
Absolutely. And that's, in fact, I enjoy answering that question because that's one of the things that I can uniquely offer to the unraveling of the Tesla cover-up and the questions about these imponderables involving what his contribution was. When I was serving on Project Pegasus as a child, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 years old, three project principals on Project Pegasus affirmed to me, directly to me, that the project owed its greatest debt of gratitude, technically speaking, to Nikola Tesla. And those individuals were my father, Raymond F. Bishago of the CIA Parsons connection. My dad was basically the chief technical consultant between Parsons and the CIA on Tesla teleportation. The same thing was affirmed by Jack Pruitt, who was a team leader on Pegasus, who went on, according to Nichols and Moon, to become the research director of Project Montauk in the 80s, and also a very distinguished member of Project Pegasus, which was Dr. Robert Beckwith, who would go on to earn 20 or more of the fundamental electronics patents of the computer age. So these were principals on Project Pegasus, and they were very clear that the project essentially was an outgrowth of Nikola Tesla's papers that have been kept at LANL since 1944.
Why do you think it is that they were so interested in not only suppressing the technology out there? I think the collection of money had a lot to do with it, but also his name in general, too, as well. It seemed like a constant smear campaign. And then as soon as he died, he gets his patent back, which was worthless at that point. And they started to rebuild his name all the way through the 60s. But while he was alive, that just wasn't the case. Why do you think that was?
Well, I think he was being smeared during his life because of the fact that his technologies were economically, that is to say, financially disruptive. I think after his death, in that 25-year period between LANL and DARPA having his papers, but then finally achieving Tesla-based teleportation with one of his technologies no later than 1968, which is the year that I first teleported, I think in that case it was official state secrecy that was relegating Tesla to the as a non-historical figure, so to speak. They were basically burying his existence because they had made his technology secret. And so my answer to your question basically is I believe it was the post-war fact that Tesla's technologies were weaponized that led to this submerging of Tesla historically. So let me describe how I can establish that. When my dad first took me up to the teleporter at Curtis Wright in winter of 1968, that was the winter of my first grade year. I was 6.5 years old. We teleported to Santa Fe and took a car to LANL, and we were escorted to the offices of Harold M. Agnew, one of the quintessential Manhattan Project physicists, an individual who had been part of every critical phase of Project Manhattan, from the squash courts at Chicago to the calibration of the Hiroshima blast, and the designing and the building of the atomic bomb and its testing at Trinity site. So Agnew was really one of the principal Manhattan Project physicists. He then arrived at his office, and my father was there to present a prospectus to Agnew to involve civilian adults and children in Tesla teleportation testing and training. Dr. Agnew began reading the prospectus, and he asked my father, almost in sort of a cavalier way, "How was your trip?" And my father said, "Fine and fast." And then Agnew looked up, sort of smiling sheepishly, and said, "Oh, did you take the teleporter, Ray?" And my dad said, "Yep, and so did my number three son." And my dad looked over at me. I was sitting on his right. Harold looks at me and says, "How old?" And my father and I simultaneously say, in reference to my age, 6. Then there was a pause, and from that we can date the time of that meeting with Agnew. Then there was a pause, and my dad kind of said, kind of trying to goad Harold to get an interest, more interested in teleportation, I believe, said, "Have you tried it yet?" And this quintessential Manhattan Project physicist said, "No, but I want to." Now, what position was Agnew serving in when we had that meeting in 68? He was still the director of the W division at LANL, not the entire labs, which he would become director of in 1970 and then stay in that post until 1978. In the period 1967 to 70, Dr. Harold M. Agnew was the director of the W division at the Los Alamos National Labs.
What was the W division?
The weapon division, the weapons division. So that reveals that the Tesla teleportation that my father was presenting him to try to see if we could wrest it out of the realm of official state secrecy and use it to advantage humanity, allow civilians to Tesla teleport. I mean, we got from Woodridge, New Jersey to Santa Fe, a distance of 2,005 miles, in several seconds to meet with Dr. Agnew in New Mexico. But there we find Agnew, one of the Manhattan Project physicists, the director of the weapons division. And that really shows up the fact that Tesla teleportation was submerged in the realm of official state secrecy because it had been weaponized. They wanted to use it to put troops precisely where they were needed on the battlefield.
Let me jump in right there. This is Coast to Coast. Tonight we are celebrating the birthday of Nikola Tesla. I am your host, Jimmy Church. More with Andrew Bishago right after this short break. Stay with us. Tonight we are celebrating the birthday of Nikola Tesla. My guest, first up, is Andrew Bishago. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'll be right back. All right, welcome back to Coast. We're going old school tonight. We're celebrating Nikola Tesla's birthday, and I am keeping the phone lines open all night long. All right, let's go back to Andrew. Andrew, there's one thing about Tesla that I'm fascinated with. He was so far ahead of the curve. Where do you think he was getting the ideas from? Do you think he had a connection to somebody maybe off planet?
Possibly. I mean, there are millions of extraterrestrial abductees and contactees in the world, and it's certainly possible that his intelligence was enhanced in some way, or that certain mathematical formulae and principles were implanted in his mind as a result of extraterrestrial contact. I mean, that seems to have been the thrust of the small grays, since they helped basically kickstart our civilization again,
right,
5,000 years ago in ancient Sumer, which was in fact the position of the U.S. Defense Department as we were inculcated about as children in Project Pegasus. So maybe the small grays were visiting Tesla when he was growing up and working with him to become the technical genius that he undoubtedly became.
I've often thought, when you look at guys like Tesla or Da Vinci, that quite possibly somebody from the future could have come back and visited them and given them the gift of some information from the future to help guide them. And I don't think that's very far outside of a possibility, because Tesla's vision was so, so far out there that you just have to wonder where he got the information from.
Well, there was some technology transfer apparently between Tesla and Project Pegasus. And let me explain that anecdote. My friend and co-researcher Alexander Bruce, the writer, claims that in a dinner conversation with Jack Pruitt and his late son Glenn Pruitt, who was one of my fellow child teleportees in Project Pegasus, Jack showed her a photograph of Jack and his father when they were adults meeting with Tesla before his death. Now, Tesla died in 1943. Jack Pruitt was born in 1934, so he was eight or nine when Tesla died, and could not have met with him as an adult. And she insisted that they insisted that it was a real historical photograph. So apparently, after Tesla teleportation was reduced to practice, and after Tesla-based time travel then emerged through the manipulation of the Tesla teleporter, there was the movement of personnel in our present back to Tesla's time. So Tesla literally could have been consulting. This is very convoluted, but it looks like Tesla was consulting on the derivation of technologies that his work in applied electromagnetics had sparked, but that we then found had time travel and teleportation implications, and then we used to go back and consult with him in real time.
Let's take a couple of quick phone calls. Let's go to Wild Card. Let's go to Kurt up in Utah. Kurt, welcome to Coast. You're up first.
Hey, how are you doing this evening?
We're doing good, Kurt.
Hey, thank you, Jimmy, and thank you, Andrew. Hey, was Tesla a truly humble man?
Yes, he was a saintly man. One time he found that another individual was using one of his patented inventions without his permission, and he let it go forward without trying to profit from it, saying, well, he's a good man doing good work. Another time he found that a contract that he had entered into with another researcher might render that individual, who was a family man and had children, to become destitute. And to protect that man and his family, Nikola Tesla ripped up that contract. So Tesla was truly an enlightened human being, as hopefully we will all be when we're living in a 21st century, equipped with his advanced technologies.
Thank you for the phone call, Kurt. An excellent question. And let's go to Let's just go to Detroit. Let's go to Eric. Eric, you're up next.
Hey, I heard that Tesla had this orthodox background and that he went to school for, you know, mechanical engineering somewhere up there in Europe or whatever. And I was kind of curious, after reading this short story called Canticle for Leibowitz, which is a science fiction story, which is based on, like, a sect of priests who end up preserving, like, essentially ancient technology. And I kind of think, like, he even said he imagined blueprints in his mind. Any thoughts?
Oh, yeah. Excellent question. Do you think that he was imagining stuff in his mind and then he put pen to paper? I'd imagine that's how most creative genius goes. But what do you know about that, Andrew?
Well, I would defer that to Tim Eaton because he's a Tesla biographer. But let me say that one of the things that's kind of mysterious about all this is that Tesla was far enough out there on the creative threshold, on the creative limit, you know, the limits of the human mind, that actually time travel emerged from his technology somewhat at the hands of the U.S. government and not Tesla. And that was the second piece that I can uniquely offer to the unraveling of the Tesla cover-up, which is that we began teleporting through vortal tunnels in time-space, propagated by the teleporter at Curtis Wright in Woodridge, New Jersey, as a group of school children attached to the project in the summer of 1970. But just a couple months later, by fall of 1970, when we would jump from the Tesla teleporter at the Sandia National Laboratory at Sandia, adjacent to the Kirtland Air Force Base near Albuquerque, back to the tarmac at Curtis Wright in Woodridge, New Jersey, night had already fallen often in New Mexico, and we had been treated to dinner at a Howard Johnson restaurant in Albuquerque. And yet we began to notice there in fall of 70 that it was like 11 o'clock in the morning when we were arriving. And we confronted some of our sort of the subalterns there who were sort of handling us and just our docents at Curtis Wright, just getting us from point A to point B. Hey, listen, are you guys putting us back in time? And they said, yes. They kind of, you know, reluctantly revealed to them, yes, we're putting you back in time so we can bring you back to your schools and you can walk home or take the bus home from school and nobody will know that you're time traveling. Okay, so we said, how much time can you put us back in time? And they said, well, so far, 12 hours. Now, my point here is that in leaving his blueprints, as you put it, in his papers that were then sent to the Los Alamos National Labs and that individuals like my dad were being given clearance to for 25 years, even before Tesla teleportation in real time emerged, I'm not certain that Tesla intended that device to be manipulated into a device that could not only teleport somebody through a vortal tunnel in time-space, but that they could then in turn manipulate the device so that the person upon arrival through the vortal tunnel arrived in what we call the past or future. I don't think he intended that. So I think that's really my point here is that I think that that's a measure of his really advanced creativity because there was so much richness in it that ultimately got exploited by the U.S. government. And the key now is we have to de-weaponize these technologies and use them to advantage humanity.
Interesting. Let's jump out west. Let's go out west to Jenna in San Francisco. Jenna, welcome to Coast. We're celebrating Tesla's birthday.
Hey, thank you so much for taking my call. A pleasure to speak to both of you, and I really like you, Jimmy. I like your approach. And Andrew, you're really brave to bring forth all this information. And I have a couple of questions. One is, were you designated as one of the future presidents? I know that you identified Barack Obama. I know you're running for president from what I've read on the internet. Were you designated as one of the future presidents? And the second question is about that figure on Mars that it looked like a miniature man. It was several years ago, and people kind of dismissed it, but he looked like he was in a jumpsuit and with a beard and a mustache and coming to clean the rover.
Well, no, I wasn't designated a future president, but utilizing the quantum access capability that Project Pegasus essentially gave the CIA, I was identified, that is to say, pre-identified as a future president, at least on one of the major timelines. And I'll give you my sources because that's critical to such an outlandish claim. I was told by my late father, Raymond F. Bishago, when I was in training in the Mars Jump Room training program of 1980, my destiny as president and that of Barry Satoru, who was one of our fellow trainees who now uses the name Barack Obama, were being openly discussed by the CIA people, that is to say the adults, the adult Americans who were auditing the class, including parents and several others. They were openly talking about the fact that Barry, as we called him, Barry Obama, as it were, and I were future presidents. Now, I don't know to a dispositive certainty that I reached the presidency because I was never really an intelligence insider. You know, I was a time traveler in Pegasus, and then I was a Mars jumper, but I wasn't somebody operating even at my dad's level, or let's say the level of somebody like the former director of Central Intelligence, John Alexander McCone, who I met one time at a restaurant in Albuquerque when I was a boy, you know, a young child on the project, who were reading the reports of information about the past, but also most interestingly about the future that the quantum access capability that Pegasus gave the CIA was being used to do things like identify future presidents. I was present at two lunches in Albuquerque, one in which both Presidents Bush were being feted as future presidents, and then a much smaller lunch where several of us were present with a young Bill Clinton, and the fact that he was had been identified as a future president were discussed. So I don't really think it's fair to me for me to go out on a limb and say, I know I'm going to be president, because now that I've run, I realize that it's difficult to run for president and get elected. A lot of good men have tried it, including luminaries like William Jennings Bryan. And so I've been upfront with the American people in the way that the other pre-identified presidents have not been. We know that Presidents Bush, Clinton, Bush, and Obama were given prior knowledge of their presidencies based on the emergence of time travel inside the U.S. government in the early 1970s. What they chose not to do, probably because, I mean, claiming that time travel exists and that you're pre-identified as a president is quite a tall drink of water that probably in their calculation of their political interests, they've chosen not to share. I decided to reverse that formula and say, wait a minute. I swore an oath of attorney on November 15th of 1996 in the courthouse at Clark County, Washington, when I became an attorney, to uphold the U.S. Constitution. And I think I owe a debt to the Constitution and to the American people to reveal this obscure fact that is so profound in its implications that future presidents are being identified. Was I one of them? Yes. Do I know the way that a CIA insider would be able to say, I saw the briefing documents that describe President Andrew D. Bishago? No. And so I really can't hang my hat on it the way that my dad was basically speaking in terms of a blithe certainty, as it were, that I am a future president. Maybe something changed when I was jumping to Mars. Maybe I was set off from achieving that destiny by some of the corrective functions that were taken to stabilize me in time space. For example, there was something done in 1989 in Socorro, New Mexico, to fix me on my current timeline. Maybe that timeline involves running for president and not winning. But yes, that's the story. Several people in CIA with reporting requirements to CIA, my father, also a career CIA officer, senior case officer by the name of Courtney M. Hunt, during their lifetimes stated to me directly that I should get prepared, you know, intellectually and emotionally for becoming president someday.
Thank you for the phone call, Jenna. Excellent question. And let's jump out east. Let's grab one last call. Dan in Manassas, Virginia. Dan, you're up next on Coast.
Real quick, like, first of all, a question, then a tiny comment. First of all, have you noticed that in Tesla's work that he transfers concepts, patterns, processes, and relations from one project to the next? Do you see what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And I think in that sense, he was probably, in what you're describing, look at how deftly he was dealing with the negative electricity concepts of a Walter Russell. That may be literally the key to what he was embedded in that energetic array that he left in blueprint form, that then was evolved by DARPA into the teleporter and from there into the teleportation-based time travel. So, yes, I think that's a very astute point that you make.
And, Dan, what was your second question?
Okay, I just wanted to tell you that as an elder, sightless, empath, and synesthete, that we owe a great gratitude towards Tesla because in the things that I've done, I don't think I would be doing what I'm doing unless that I had been motivated both by what I've learned about Tesla and by his spirit. And I'll just leave it at that.
Thank you so much, Dan, for the phone call. And he's right, Andrew. How do you think history is going to look back at Tesla in 50 years? It's got to change.
As the Leonardo type that he was, I mean, Tesla was one of those singular individuals. There's only been several since, let's say, 1450, you know, the time of the High Renaissance, who, like a Leonardo, made a fundamental contribution to society. And I think if I'm successful in my quest to roll out Tesla-based teleportation, not time travel, but just the teleportation in real time, so that we can transform the transportation infrastructure on our planet and interdict 60% of the greenhouse gases that are part of the human contribution to climate change, namely that part that is attributable to the transport sector.
Right.
I think 50 years hence we'll recognize that literally our civilization was saved from a global coastal flooding event or possibly the advent of a new ice age, as described by Whitley Strieber and our friend Art Bell, who we send our prayers out tonight to overcome his medical crisis, as literally the principal individual whose technologies allowed us to prevent that global event that could have eclipsed or could still eclipse modern civilization if we don't get a handle on climate change. And it will be, I believe, and this is why I believe it's the most important environmental issue, indeed the most important political issue of our times, which is the adoption of Tesla-based teleportation so we can remove those greenhouse gases from the atmosphere.
How do we get to his papers? Is there a way to get those exposed? And do you think we'll ever, ever see them?
We can't get them released because they're classified, so we can't use ordinary means. And in fact, that's one of the raison d'etre that I'm running for president. Because as president, I couldn't release them as national security secrets because then any terrorist or rogue faction or foreign country could take that knowledge and potentially eclipse us by creating a teleportation infrastructure first. But certainly an important informant here who I would now urge to come forward. You know, Jimmy, you know that I'm bringing forward William Whitecrow, the man who taught me martial arts when I was time traveling for DARPA.
Yes.
And I'm also bringing one of my fellow teleportees that I grew up with, went to the same elementary school as, and indeed even went to church with, my fellow teleportee Mark DePrimo, the guitarist. But an individual that I think Coach should try to develop as a guest is Carl Jack Pruitt, Lieutenant, United States Navy, born 1934.
I would Jack love, let me jump in, and we're at the end here, but let me just say this, Andrew. Nobody wants to interview Jack Pruitt more than myself. And if there's any way that you can assist us in that, I would love to get Jack on the air. And listen, I want to thank you for everything, Andrew, and a great conversation tonight. And we are celebrating the birthday of Nikola Tesla. This is Coast to Coast AM. We're doing it old school. I'm keeping the phone lines open all night. Follow me on Twitter at JChurchRadio. Questions, comments during the show, it all happens in real time. This is Coast to Coast AM.